Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, December 28th. I'm Ray Graff. 2017 has been a year of striking headlines. In the U.S., Donald Trump became our 45th president, and the Me Too movement led to the firing and resignations of entertainment, media, and political leaders. The Korean Peninsula continued to be a potential powder keg. International agreements on climate change and Iran's nuclear capabilities were put into question. Locally, a fire destroyed downtown Cohoes. A quadruple homicide just this week shook Troy. And the controversial sale of artwork from the Berkshire Museum grabbed national headlines. Here to discuss the top news stories of 2017 are Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, and WAMC's news director, Ian Pickus, and your calls as well at 800-348-2551. We begin after the news.
January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. In order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
We're reporting from Las Vegas, overlooking the casinos of the Las Vegas Strip. From this window, we can look out and see a miniature Eiffel Tower and Planet Hollywood, and also electric signs appealing for blood donations and prayers for the victims of Sunday night's shooting.
Thank you for joining us. We are continuing to follow the breaking news. We have confirmed that FBI Director James Comey has been fired just 3 months.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to Today. And Hoda's here with me at this morning because this is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News. Just moments ago, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack sent the following note to our organization. Dear colleagues, on Monday night, we received a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior in the workplace by Matt Lauer. It represented, after serious review, a clear violation of our company's standards. As a result, we have decided to terminate his employment.
And we are reporting on news from inside the NPR newsroom today. Our top editor, NPR Senior Vice President of News, Mike Oreskes, has resigned following accusations of sexual harassment.
In August of this year, the president laid out his vision for a tax cut that would be a middle-class miracle. And that's exactly what the Congress passed today.
Hello, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. As you heard, we are reviewing the top news stories of 2017 today, and in the studio for the discussion, Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. Ken, Judy, Ian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Yeah, thanks. And if I may, very quickly, on behalf of the station, Judy and Ken do so much to help us cover the region in the Northeast on a weekly basis at WAMC. So thanks for that throughout the year and today.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. But I thought it was Vox Pax, there'd be food.
Oh, there'd be food. Oh, stick around.
Back on Friday.
Tomorrow, I think tomorrow is drinks. So stick around. Come on back. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 if you want to join in the conversation, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. I think a sage once said, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. I think a lot of people are renouncing their amateur status this year. to me, 2017 has been a very strange year.
It has been a strange year. What's amazing is whenever you do these year-end things, you forget how much has gone on during the year. But this year, it was on hyperdrive. I mean, you know, starting with the new president, you know, Donald Trump, and, you know, the late-night tweeting and the Rocket Man insults and, you know, everything that's gone on, and the fact that some of his key things that he promised to get done, other than the tax reform bill, you know, health care did not happen. The health care repeal and reform, you know, that didn't happen. The building of the wall didn't happen. His $1 trillion rebuilding program didn't happen. So, you know, but it's just been almost like a reality TV show gone to Washington, and it sucked out a lot of the attention, or sucked away a lot of the attention from state and local news.
I mean, we'll go around the room before we really get going in detail here and find out the top stories on your lists. And Ken Lovett of the Daily News, what was yours?
I think it is Trump. I mean, you know, I cover state government, but you couldn't avoid what was going on in Washington because of the impact it was having on New York politics, whether it's health care cuts, even though they didn't reform it, there was a lot of lost funding. You know, just as I said, there was so much going on, but the attention was on Washington. So it would be really hard. You know, there's certainly state stories you can look at, but Trump is really the number one story, I think, internationally, let alone in the U.S.
When President Obama first took office, that was also huge news around the world. And it seems like 80 years ago rather than 8 years ago, but I can't remember if the focus on Washington was as bright as it is now.
No, but you also didn't have a president who you woke up to, and what was his tweet today? Was he condemning the NFL? Was he condemning a world leader? Was he chiming in on you know, a racist rally out in the South? Was he chiming in about the London terrorist attacks? You know, Obama wasn't that kind of president, but, you know, Trump just says what he thinks, and he puts it out there unfiltered through Twitter, and that generated a ton of coverage, let alone the policies he enacted or tried to enact. But really, Trump the personality almost usurped Trump the president.
Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, it must be almost impossible as an editor to find out what to put in and what not to put in.
You know, it was actually fairly easy. It's the decision is what not to put in. It's true. And the Trump presidency has had such a trickle-down effect because, you know, you had the Women's March in Washington and the local impact. You had football players taking a knee, and you had the local high school football players taking a knee. And, you know, just this past couple of weeks, we've had people trying to figure out whether they can pay their property taxes ahead of time to avoid the penalties they're going to get when the new rules take effect in the federal income tax.
Do we have a lot of confusion in the world? Wasn't that one of the end time signals? There'd be great confusion.
I thought that Trump actually sucked all the air out of the news this year. But then when I went back through all the old papers, there actually was a lot of local news that happened. We had casinos opened in New York State. We had, and locally, we had some important crime stories. So it's not that nothing happened. It's just that he does overshadow everything.
All right, let's pull the name Trump out of that list for a minute. Judy Patrick, what was your biggest story?
I'd say the opening of the casino in Schenectady, and as well as the casino out in Rochester, and there's one in Tioga Downs, and we're expecting another one in the Catskills come March.
Early 18. I think they've pushed that up, actually.
Right, and then the other interesting part about that story is the fact that they haven't done as well as projected, that the revenues are not living up to what the casino operators said they would when they filed their applications.
Some people projected that they wouldn't do mm-hmm. as well, as saturation certainly comes into play. Ian Pickus, our news director, and really a tough taskmaster here at WAMC. Ian, for you...
That's enough, Ray.
For you, what was the big one?
I'll give you two, and one, as we sit here in downtown Albany, we had a big mayoral campaign this year in the city of Albany. I think if you paid attention to the Democratic primary, that you were expecting maybe a closer outcome, a closer race than in the end, where Mayor Kathy Sheehan basically cruised to a second term. In terms of politics, I try to keep it local on that level, though, of course, Trump did infect, I should say, a lot of our congressional corner coverage and the Capitol connection. Bigger picture stuff in the Northeast. It's not exactly a sexy topic, not a controversial one per se, but water safety quality was a huge story for mm-hmm. our newsroom this year. If you look at rural Rensselaer County, if you look at Pownal, Vermont, and Bennington, and down near Stewart Base and in the Newburgh area, you were dealing with a lot of people who didn't know if their water was safe to drink, and a lot of officialdom sort of looking to other people to make that determination or to act. And that led to a year's worth, a body of work of stories at a really basic level.
And our reporters did extensive work on that story. And you get the feeling when you hear the work of our reporters that this is only the tip of the iceberg nationally.
I think you're right. The more testing is done, the more these issues, when we're talking about PFOS and PFOA-type chemicals, will be discovered. And then you look nationally at a story like Flint. The people in Flint still do not have clean water years after this was discovered, and these are going to be long-term effects for the people who drank that water, and it's a long-term infrastructure project to fix it. And when you hear President Trump say, you know, we can probably work with the Democrats on infrastructure next year, you wonder at what point does that trickle down, pardon my term, to something as local as the problem in Newburgh. And a great detail that our Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn uncovered, in a city like Newburgh, where there are just a lot of poor people, even communicating to the populace about the state of the water was an entire process. And in fact, a lot of the pamphlets had to be put out in English and Spanish and Haitian Creole to get people blood tested. So you're talking about a really massive crisis that goes down to a block-by-block response.
Very interesting. Our guests today on the program, as we wrap up the top news stories of 2017, we have Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. You are welcome. In fact, we implore you, join the conversation, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We will get to your calls and talk about a lot more stuff coming up.
Support for Vox Pop on WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that's good for the skin. Jane Iredale, retail shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington. JaneIredale.com. 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare, using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20railroad.com. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and respite care, family, friends, community. 518-456-7831 for tours and information. And from the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.com.
Nobody that's been involved in this case is going to ever forget this, I can tell you that.
Troy Police Chief John Tedesco, during a Wednesday afternoon press conference at Troy City Hall, told reporters about the grisly scene inside a home at 158 2nd Avenue in the Lansingburg section of the city.
It was just a fire of all fires and something I had never seen in my 26 years.
Both former Speaker Sheldon Silver and former State Senate Leader Dean Skello saw their 2015 convictions overturned on appeal.
I'm Representative Sean Patrick Maloney. Where the heck is your congressman?
He's a cheap shot artist.
It is a great day for Albany. It's a great day because we've reelected Mayor Kathy Sheehan.
This was a people-powered Rensselaer County revolution.
Voters sent a loud message Tuesday in Westchester County. In a contentious county executive race that was considered a dead heat, Democratic New York State Senator George Latimer defeated Republican incumbent Rob Astorino.
I think the decision came easier for me because there's a realization that we had accomplished what we started out to do in many ways.
Somebody said, well, geez, aren't you a little old to be doing some of this stuff? I says, well, not according to Gail Coretti, because she said, do good for as long as you can. And that's what I plan on doing.
If Brian claimed to have influence over my decisions or over the Senate, he should not have said that. It is simply not true.
I've never harmed a woman, and I would imagine that if I did, women would be coming out saying I harmed them.
This is Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a year-end omnibus of top news stories of 2017. Ray Graff here with you, and the number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, Ken Lovett of the Daily News, and our own Ian Pickus. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We have one email here, and then I want to go around the room very quickly on New York State and Governor Cuomo and politics, and then we'll get to the phones. This one came in from Jim in Montgomery County, you know, in Montgomery. 2017 has certainly been an unprecedented year. My prediction for 2018, more of the same until the Democrats take both houses of Congress, at which point Trump, who has no real fundamental beliefs, will again switch parties before they take office in a desperate attempt to avoid impeachment. Anyone have a view on this? And that's from Jim.
A lot of what ifs there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
A lot of steps between A and B.
Yeah. Anybody? Nah, no one wants to touch it.
I agree. There's a lot of what ifs there. If I've learned anything with Trump, especially during the campaign, is predictions don't mean anything because they're never right.
Let me relay something that Congressman Jim McGovern told us this morning on the Congressional Corner. Now, he's about as far left a Democrat as you have in the House of Representatives, represents a very liberal section of Massachusetts. And he said, you know, look, I don't like the guy. Impeachment imposes strict damage to the United States, no matter who is being impeached and for what reason. So I think a lot of Democrats in 2018 think they can run against him in the midterms, and they might not want to go that route so early.
As a cynical strategy, if you're a Democrat and you have a shot in 2018, wouldn't you rather have him there?
Yeah, I think that's one argument we are hearing from the political people in Washington we talk to.
You also get their base, the Republican base, fired up if you do go through an impeachment process like that.
Cuomo 2020. Ken Lovett.
Cuomo 2020. I mean, there's still a lot of people who don't necessarily think he's going to do it, but certainly he is trying desperately to raise his national profile on the back of President Trump. He's been out there, not as much as Eric Schneiderman, who I think has filed 100 different lawsuits and other procedures against the administration. But Cuomo really, for the first 4 years, stayed away from national politics. He didn't do national interviews. He didn't really wade in. This year, we saw a different Cuomo. He'll say because of the impact on New York, but
he's going to be on MSNBC in 5 minutes. Right? In fact,
he was in the front. You know, he was really front and center in the tax reform debate, saying that this tax reform plan would, you know, gut New York. He used a lot of harsh language. He went to Puerto Rico twice. He went to the Virgin Islands after the hurricanes. He went to Israel. So he's traveling more than we've seen him travel. He's definitely upped his national profile, more national TV and radio appearances. But he's had a tough year, and he's going into a re-election year. But, you know, the budget was really late for the first time for the guy. His, a lot of upstate economic development initiatives have crumbled that he was touting prior. So I think it has been a difficult year for the governor. And while he's still the favorite next year for reelection, I don't think it's a slam dunk necessarily. And he faces some major, major obstacles heading into 2018.
Judy Patrick, I'll throw this out to you. Does the Senate... Do the Democrats in the Senate, in the New York Senate, reunite in 2018?
Oof, me, I might defer to Ken.
Oh, but I want to throw this to you first, and then you can throw it to Ian.
You
if
know,
you
the
want.
Democrats in the New York State Senate are such a unpredictable bunch. They may try to do that. I mean, I think now is a better time than it has been in previous years. I think they have a little bit of momentum going, but they have such weird coalitions that they build, and I'm not sure where Andrew Cuomo stands on it.
Well, and there's a lot of pressure on Cuomo to bring them together from the left. The left still doesn't trust him, and he had his allies put out a reunification plan that both sides agreed to. However, nobody is convinced that it actually happened. And in their heart of hearts, I'm not sure all the sides actually want it to happen. And
does the governor want it to happen?
He's one of the sides I'm talking about. I'm not sure. Certainly, I think he needs something, or he's already facing a likely primary. We don't know who yet, and how serious it might be could be based on what he does here to reunify the party. Certainly, it doesn't help him nationally if he can't reunify, you know, and grab control of the Senate for the Democrats if he's looking to run for president. So it's a very tricky issue and a big one for him.
And just one more note on that. It's a weird world where potentially the most powerful person in New York State politics at some point in 2018 will be a man called Simca Felder.
There you go. Ian Pickus is our news director at WAMC. We're also joined by Ken Lovett of the Daily News and Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette. You ready to take some calls?
Sure.
Well, let's do it. 800-348-2551 is the number. Duncan in Greenville, you're first. Go ahead.
For first, Happy New Year to the four of you and to the whole staff at WAMC.
Thank you, and you too.
And now, if you want to concentrate on the local, I'll get off, but you started out with national.
Go.
And I'm really concerned about net neutrality with the FCC, and beyond that, the early, I'm not sure what it was, but I think it was a fiat from above that opened up stations to opened up the broadcast band to allow stations to continue to aggregate their power across the whole country. I'm speaking specifically of Sinclair.
Okay. Ian, you want to go first?
Any comments?
Sure. Net neutrality, I think, you know, a lot of people who listen to this station were quite concerned about that outcome, but I don't think it came as much of a surprise. Ajit Pai, the FCC chairman who pushed through this decision recently, had said that this was going to be a priority in this new administration. And we've been hearing about that argument, especially going back to the last race for governor in New York, when the LG candidate in the Democratic primary had written much of the book on net neutrality. So it's been an issue we've talked about for a while, and we'll just have to wait and see what the outcome is here.
And a couple of state senators, one from New York and one from California, have a bill that would basically bring back the regulations in those two states. Now, there's questions whether or not, if such things pass, that it's legal. Can states basically supersede the FCC and the federal government on an issue that obviously impacts the rest of the country? But Tim Wu, who Ian just mentioned, who ran for lieutenant governor and really coined the term net neutrality, believes that it's not a slam dunk either way, that maybe states could do something and you know, bond together to push it back.
Right, and this is an issue we all should be concerned about, because consolidating the power of communication into large entities is never going to be good, because you're always going to want the smaller organizations, to have a voice. If you eliminate the number of voices, it's always bad. You don't want to concentrate news in one medium.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for doing a good job. Happy New Year to you and all that.
You too.
I'd like to say that the biggest story of not only the year, but the century is making Jerusalem a embassy of the United States. And I'd like to make a comment that has nothing to do with Israel. It has to do with the second coming of Jesus, so that when Jesus comes down, they can make him American citizenship and have him the protection of the military to protect him from the Arabs and all that.
Now, is that a 2018 prediction, or? Just kidding.
That's a millennium.
This
has been going on for since the Crusades, liberation of Jerusalem to protect the second coming of Jesus.
All right, David. Well, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, and we're joined today by Ken Lovett of the Daily News, Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus, and we review the top stories of 2017. If you want to weigh in with your pick for the top story of the year as we count down the final moments of 2017, by my account, a very weird year. We'd love to hear from you. 800-348-2551. Peter in Pittsfield. Peter, you're on.
Yes, hello. Well, of course, calling from Pittsfield, the biggest news is the Berkshire Museum's plan to sell off the most important and most valuable artworks from the collection, which could have national implications for museums across the country.
Yeah, this is Ian again, and I think this has been probably the top story out of our Berkshire Bureau. J.D. Allen, our reporter, has filed updates on this multiple times a week since the first press conference. And I'll admit to you, we covered the Berkshire Museum's expansion plan announcement. One of those stories you do a lot in the Berkshires, where one of the arts organizations we cover is making a big announcement. I didn't think that day that we'd be with that story for another 6 months the way we have. But once people got to look at the details a little more, and for people who might not have been following it as closely, the museum plans to sell two Norman Rockwells and a bunch of other works in order to fund this expansion. And now the attorney general is looking into this. There is a lawsuit seeking to halt that injunction. There's a countersuit. This is one of those stories that on a slow day in the summer did not feel like a six-month story, and I think we'll be talking about it for quite a while.
Yeah, and I think it's remarkable. We have an art story as one of the top stories we're talking about in December.
But it's not a happy art story. It's a controversial art story, so, you know, it's something. Peter, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. We are joined today by some real brainy print people and a broadcaster. Ken Lovitz here, Judy Patrick, and, of course, the broadcaster is Ian Pickus. And our number is 800-348-2551. Hillary in Cohoes. Hillary, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This isn't about the stories of the year, but more like predictions for the next couple of years. Eventually Trump won't be the president. And I was wondering how you guys felt like his kind of like brazen, Twitter-heavy style will affect future candidates or presidents. Like, if you think that that's going to be a lasting effect, or if you think it's going to be like a blip in our historical I forget the word, but anyway.
I think the cat's out of the bag on that one.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're seeing it more. You may not see it as brazen as Trump, but you see a lot of candidates, whether it was Roy Moore, whether, you know, Andrew Cuomo, who says, you know, the tone of the discussion has gotten much more lowbrow from local levels to state levels to national levels. And you'll see it in races, and you'll hear the terms, he speaks what he thinks, and I don't care that he said X because he just says what he wants. Will there be a pushback? Maybe, but will it be as much as Trump? Perhaps not, but I think you are seeing a different way of campaigning, a different way of talking to the American people, and social media certainly has a huge impact on that, and the way people deal with the press and each other, frankly, have a huge impact on that.
Well, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Judy.
I think it's a blip. I think that
really?
I think Trump has a distinctive personality, but I think shades of it will be picked up by other politicians going forward. But I have a feeling there's going to be a pushback, and people are going to go, you know what, we want the people speaking more carefully going forward. Social media is always going to have an impact, but I think Trump is able to do things that other people are not able to do.
At the risk of getting too meta, let me give you a moment that really stuck out to me this year. It was very early in the year. I was in the studio with Alan and Congressman John Faso of the 19th District on the Congressional Corner. And Alan asked Congressman Faso about something. I don't remember what. And Congressman Faso said, well, that's fake news, Alan. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was crystallized just how much this moment had revolved around a sort of a new vocabulary and a new paradigm.
And I just don't think it's going to be a blip. Again, I don't think it's going to be as outrageous necessarily as Donald Trump, because he's certainly a self-promoter and he goes a lot further. But I think what you'll see candidates doing is, how can we attract those kind of voters, you know, the voters that Trump attracted, without being as alienating? So they'll try to find a way around it, but I do think that that's what you're going to see. You know, the outsiders speak and the attack. You always have attacks, but I think you've been seeing it head this way long before Trump, and Trump just raised it to another level, and I don't think it's going back.
It certainly makes reporting in the print a little more tricky.
Right, and I wonder whether we'll ever hear a wonderful oratory again, you know, whether a wonderful speech that will captivate us and bring us to tears from a politician.
Is this because society in general has become rougher and gruffer and more base, or is this just, again, is this symptomatic of a society gone astray?
I think we're a reality TV show. You know, Trump is the effect, but I think we've been heading that way, you know, between reality TV and how we view things. I just think little by little you've seen it. And I think over the past decade or more, the devaluing of the institutions that make up a democracy. If you listen to the debate when the Supreme Court came out with a decision, people didn't disagree with the decision. They politicized the judges. And that started long before Trump. You heard it with the legislature devaluing. And now what Trump has done is he's basically come and he's knocking down all the pillars of what makes up the democracy, whether it's the media, whether it's the judicial, whether it's the legislative. But I think that started long before Trump came along, and he tapped into that, and he's brought it to a different level. But he tapped into what's already was there.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel depressed.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
And ready for that drink?
Judy, just if you're looking for an orator in your future, you know, Twitter did go from 140 to 280 characters this year. So.
And by the way, bonus points to you, Ian, for using the term meta in the broadcast. 800-348-2551, the number. Let's get another call in here before the next break. Jan and Rhinebeck is on. Jan.
Yes, hi, thank you. I appreciated that discussion of the tenor of political discourse. And I have to say a top local story for me came up at the end of the year, the planned purchase of the water tower by WAMC. Now, I don't know how I would have gotten through this year of Trump without it, and the political discourse on WAMC was quite superior, but I'm sure that the community will be able to come up with the needed cash and help to make it a happy new year for all of us, WAMC, and all its listeners.
Oh, nice.
Was that a plant?
Yeah. The check is in the mail.
No.
But that, obviously, no, it's not a water tower. You misspoke. It's a transmitter.
I mean,
tower.
The radio tower.
Right. Yes. A water tower would be pretty good,
well,
too.
Just,
well, if things take a turn, we might need one of those, too.
That just shows you it wasn't planned. Well, radio tower, of course.
Thank you so much for that, and we appreciate it. And yes, if you want to chip in and help us with the whole radio tower deal, go to WAMC.org. You'll learn a lot more about it. There's an article by Alan Chartok right on the main page, and you can find out more. You can make your pledge. All right, over to Jim in Albany. Jim.
Hey, hello, Ray. Happy New Year.
You too.
How about Mitch McConnell in the news this year? Because his blocking of President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court found the cooperation of Mitch McConnell's old buddy, Donald Trump, who followed through on McConnell's bad work by nominating yet another judge when we already had a good nomination. This is a big story. Why has the panel ignored it?
So you're talking about blocking of Merrick Garland, which wasn't unconstitutional, however.
Pardon me?
It was apparently not unconstitutional.
Well, you, Ray, I respect your point of view, but my point of view, I got the Constitution right in front of me. It's on the Senate is supposed to give the president their advice and consent, right? They did not do that.
I think this is something that Ken was talking about, where we've seen an erosion of norms in recent years. Great example. President Obama is reelected to a second term. In the last year of that term, there's an opening on the Supreme Court. Here's a way where our politics has become much more zero-sum and rough-edged. Merrick Garland did not get a hearing, and Donald Trump, during the primary, released a list of potential Supreme Court justices, and one person on that list is now on the Supreme Court.
And you can't, you know, I can't blame Trump for that. I mean, Trump has the right to appoint his own nominee like any president does. Now, you know, whether the Senate acted appropriately or not prior, Trump came in and did what he said he was going to do.
And McConnell took a huge gamble, and it paid off.
Mm-hmm. Although it was a pretty tough year for Mitch McConnell otherwise.
Let's take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for Vox Pop on WAMC comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting Golfstrom, a musical quartet performing international Jewish music Sunday, January 14th at 3:30 p.m. National Museum of Dance, Saratoga Springs. Dessert reception, 518-584-8730 for reservations. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York. Working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George. Hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. Lori Donovan Designs, Lenox, for over 40 years, offering contemporary and estate jewelry as well as colored gemstones, specializing in custom handmade jewelry, repurposing, and repairs. LoriDonovan.com. Wild Bird Junction, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar. Offering wild bird seed, bird feeders and houses, heated bird baths, binoculars, nature jewelry, gifts, toys, and games. Where people and nature come together, wildbirdjunction.com. And from the Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, New York, presenting to distribute and multiply the Phoebes and Schmidt gift. Through December 31st, HydeCollection.org for more information.
The controversial sale of art from the Berkshire Museum's collection was planned for today at Sotheby's Auction House in New York City, but late last week, an appeals court judge approved a one-month injunction.
Embattled Rensselaer County District Attorney Joel Abelove has been charged with official misconduct and perjury.
More than 200 nurses walked out of Berkshire Medical Center in Pittsfield, Massachusetts this morning and onto the picket line.
Save staffing now.
The New York State Departments of Environmental Conservation and Health have released preliminary results of ongoing studies to assess PFC contamination in fish in both the Newburgh area and the Hoosick Falls region.
We need the Air Force to designate Stewart as the top cleanup site in all these United States.
15 more demonstrators, including a 98-year-old activist, were in Southern Berkshire District Court Tuesday for blocking Kinder Morgan's Connecticut pipeline expansion in Otis State Forest. Frances Crowe says she's ready to go to jail.
No way do they want to put a 98-year-old woman in jail, but I hope this will give others the courage to think differently.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We're reviewing the top news stories of 2017 today. Joining us for the discussion, Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, Judy Patrick of the Daily Gazette, and WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. You can join in the conversation by giving us a call at 800-348-2551. And this one actually came in via email from Mark, who says, good afternoon. One of the top news stories of 2017 was what happened in Charlottesville and the subsequent reemergence of overt racism. Donald Trump has only allowed white supremacists to rebrand themselves as white nationalists. And in 2017, with Steve Bannon, Trump welcomed them back into the mainstream. Very sad for America. And that is from Mark. Anybody?
One of the longest discussions. I teach a media ethics class at UAlbany. And one of the multiple week discussions we had was how much attention should outlets give to those fringe groups, which are really no longer so fringe. The New York Times got a ton of blowback after writing about the Nazi who's shopping at Target next to you, whatever it was. This American Life has devoted a few really powerful episodes to kind of probing this alt-right phenomenon, and I think that's a question that hasn't really been answered yet.
Well, let's ask our news editor for the Daily Gazette.
You know, we run a lot of letters to the editor, and we're getting some of that in our letters, and we're letting it run because we think it's important for people, for our readers to see what other people are thinking. It's not overt. It's usually subtle, but it's there if you read our letters, and they've just been flooding in.
Oh, I've gotten emails that were... You know, I've gotten the worst emails. I've been doing this 30 years, and between letters and emails, I've gotten the worst I've had in the last year in terms of racist and anti-Semitic and all these different things. It's a different time to see that down there. You know, and I know I'm not the only one to say this, but used to be the KKK wore masks, and you know, down in Virginia, they were marching proudly in their khakis and you know, faces full out there. So. Certainly, if you thought we were in a post-racial, if we were lulled into a sense of security that we elected an African-American president two terms and that we're in a post-racial world, it's kind of a wake-up call that there's still a lot that needs to be done in this country.
And clearly around Europe as well.
And clearly around Europe as well.
Our number is 800-348-2551, and let's go back to the phones. George and Delmar. George, you're on.
This may seem marginalized, but the Intergovernmental Report on Climate Change, which year after year has pointed out that year after year, all our predictions are exceeded by actual climate changes. And the report concludes that we are, to the best of our knowledge, facing the possible extinction of the human race. And yet, this is considered marginal. Fake news, huh?
Well, I'll jump into the fray here. I think for those of us who work in local news, it's been anything but marginalized. We've looked at a lot of environmental.
Well, I'm
impacts.
Aware of that.
Yeah,
I'm talking about this discussion that we're having in this hour.
Well, we're in minute 46. We're talking about it. I don't think an hour goes by on WAMC where we're not talking about climate change and climate change impacts. But what I was going to say is that...
Well, that's why I called.
Let me give Judy some credit here. If you read the Gazette in the last decade, you learned about Mohawk River Valley flooding and the impact on communities that are still coming back from that. You looked You look at Irene and Lee years ago. Community is still coming back from that. I think that's a place where local news has shined.
Things are covered, without a doubt, and I don't dispute that at all. What I dispute at this moment is a program like this, which is supposed to be covering the most important stories of the last year.
Yes.
And what I'm mentioning is the most important story of decade after decade.
Okay, well, and that's why it's a call-in show. And thank you, George, for the call. We appreciate it. Over to John in Saratoga Springs. John, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you guys could comment on the Me Too campaign. And it seems like we've had this media saturation and there's not really a time for the common woman to speak out. And I've not seen that a lot in the generation that I'm from. Do you see it as more as extending through time, or do you see it as kind of a media saturation that will eventually go away, which I'm afraid of?
You know, I'm not sure how much legs that story has.
Really?
It may be quite extensive, but in our newsroom, we talk about the common woman, or not just the celebrities, not just the powerful people, how this affects people who work at fast food restaurants, who work in mills, not even the workplace, but in regular lives. But it is difficult because so many people have a hard time talking about any kind of a sexual harassment they've suffered. It's been an issue, for 25. It's been an issue forever. It's come to the fore right now. But it's not for lack of wanting to do those stories. And I think there are other industries that you will see pop up. As we're talking now about out in Silicon Valley, these stories starting to pop up. But again, I agree with you. I think the average person, the average woman, and even some average men are having these issues. It is just a hard story to grab.
I do think, too, that just a lot of people are saying, especially, quote-unquote common women, that, where you been? They're seeing all these stories come out now, and for so many women, it was just a way of life. If they wanted to be in the workforce, they felt they had to put up with this. Will it have an extended... you would hope so. You would hope, what you see out of Hollywood and politics. But, how many times have we seen stuff happen on the state level or in government where you've had all these sexual harassment cases? They keep going. Human nature is human nature. And, once these stories die down, you brought up a lot of the flooding and the hurricane, and you're in the middle of it, and you're like, oh, my God, this is the biggest story ever. And then a couple of months later, nobody's talking about it, even though it's not resolved. And you would hope that's not the case here. You hope there would be some kind of change, but in how people operate, and maybe with some people it will. But I think it's too early. We're still in the eye of the storm to say whether or not it'll have a major, major impact.
And our number here is 800-348-2551. This one came in, from a smart aleck named Rob, and says the top story, Albany gondola. Rob. All right, back to the phones we go.
And let's not forget the Amazon HQ pitch.
That worked out well.
The gondola is part of the plan, so maybe we'll get both together.
The interesting thing is it's a one-way gondola. It was fascinating. Jerry and Fonda, you're on. Jerry.
Good afternoon, folks. As a person who watches the news on television, reads the newspapers, and listens to the news, I think as a consumer of that, it's difficult to get an objective news broadcast, whether you choose to watch Fox and get your news coming from the right or CNN and choose to get it coming from the left. I think that is a real problem. And I think that as far as the editorial page has now spread to all 40 pages of the paper. And every story has a slant to it. And it's kind of like a trial where you have a prosecutor and a defending attorney, and they're both going to ask the same person a set of questions. You're going to deal with facts, but each one is going to leave you with a different taste in your mouth. And I think that's why we're in effect being disserviced by the news media because of that slant.
I would argue that for the most part, people try to be objective. However, I do believe there is a real issue as less and less, fewer and fewer people get their news from newspapers. What you end up seeing now are people are turning to aggregate sites. And as you said, do I watch CNN or Fox? You know, you're looking for your own slant. And so these aggregator sites, whether it's a liberal site, a conservative site, you're not getting the cross balance of selection because these people are saying, here's the stories we know you're going to be interested in. And I think it's just further dividing us. You know, I'm getting my news from a conservative site, so of course that's where my head is. I'm getting it from a liberal site, that's where my head is. And I think that is an issue. I think fewer and fewer people are looking necessarily for a balanced approach. And I think that's one problem with the fall of newspapers now, because people are just going to where they agree with. So basically, all these sites are preaching to the choir in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I'd like to defend the print papers. We do try to keep our opinions on the editorial page. But one of my suggestions to anybody who's worried about getting a comprehensive view of the news is you've got to take in information from a multitude of sources. You've got to listen to podcasts, you've got to listen to radio, you've got to read newspapers. I mean, it's not a full-time job. It shouldn't take forever. And, you know, I have gone back to the network nightly news as fairly good coverage. You know, NBC Nightly News, CBS News, they do a pretty nice job. If you stay away from the opinionated talk shows on the cable stations, I think you're better off.
Ian.
Well, I would agree with Judy. And you used to pay 50 cents for your newspaper, and what you got was a curated approach to the news that people who are professional thought about, and they looked at placement and they tried to poke holes in their own stories and they tried to get the best version of that out there. And Twitter is great. It is not the same as that.
And I do believe, to chastise some of my colleagues, I guess I'm more old school, you see a lot more on social media reporters giving their views on certain topics of the people they cover. And I'm uncomfortable with that. I try not to do that. But I do think you do see that more. And then that leads people to say so-and-so hates Trump or so-and-so hates, you know, de Blasio or Cuomo or whoever. And so you end up putting more out there than I think as reporters we should on social media.
One more quick thought on that. And that's what Trump has done quite brilliantly, is to say that if you point out that this isn't true, or if this isn't backed up by facts, you yourself are fake. That has been quite effective.
Right, but I'm not talking about that. You could see, you see tweets that are opinionated.
And retweets
that are opinionated. I think there's a difference between calling something out and saying that's not true. We all do that. You know, hey, Cuomo said this, but 2 weeks ago he said this. That's our jobs to do, is to show you that. But I think you see a lot of people, whether it's snarkiness or whether it's just their own opinions, you see that a lot more now. You know, basically people trying to brand themselves.
And you make a great point about tweeting and journalism, and it's another discussion. We don't have time for that in the last 2.5 minutes, but that is a can of worms. And let's pick that up on another program. Sometime in 2018. Okay, Uncle Ray, wrong button. How about Mark in Catskill? Mark, are you there? Hello, Mark.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, I wanted to raise the story of the DNC's Unity Reform Commission recommendations that came out this past month regarding the reform of the delegate selection process for the Democratic nomination in 2020. And the reason I think that this is an underreported story and deserves more attention is that probably if there is no reform of the nominating process and you still have superdelegates having as much power as they have had, much of the progressive base is positioned to walk away from the Democratic Party and will strongly affect the Democratic Party's chances in 2020. This is the fact that the Unity Reform Commission made these recommendations and sent them on to the DNC for voting is a big deal.
Anybody?
Yeah, I think, you know, look, there was a lot of unhappiness with what happened with Bernie Sanders, and people feel that, you know, the fix was in, and Donna Brazile said that, you know, basically, that when she took over, she was horrified to find that. So certainly the left is distrustful of its own party. And I think that's an issue the Democrats have to work out. And we have seen that Democrats are willing to vote against their own candidate, even if it means someone, a Republican, gets in.
And I think the far right also in the same boat. Okay, so let's put on our wizard's hats here and make a prediction for 2018. Have we seen now the apex of the major parties? is will that decline in 2018? Ken Lovett.
I don't know if it'll decline. I think you're seeing more and more that the extreme parts of both parties are trying to wag the tail wagging the dog. And I think that's going to continue. There's going to be a lot of pressure.
Judy Patrick.
I think there's going to be some long-term negative consequences for the Republican Party. I think that they are taking a beating now, and come the midterms, I think they're going to see some big losses.
Midterm's still a long way away.
Time flies.
Ian Pickus.
From our vantage point here at WAMC, this is a great place to watch 2018 because we've got several districts that are considered possible, if not likely, to flip. You've seen a lot of activism in the Democratic Party to go after representatives like, you know, Tenney and Faso and so on. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this year. And I think this area is a bellwether for the future of the Congress in the next year.
You promote well. Good job.
Thank you.
Ian Pickus, Judy Patrick, Ken Lovett, thanks for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in today and just for plain listening. Support comes from Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear featuring new styles for 2018. Eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. At Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores, Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Thanks again to Ken Lovett, Judy Patrick, and Ian Pickus for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Well done, Zach. Your phones are answered by Deb Malik. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, John Fisher will be here. And, oh, heavens, he'll probably bring booze. Stand by for a news update.